CF United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
My name's Sandra Clark. I am a senior software developer with the Constella Group, which is right out here in Rockville. We are actually an international company, so we have offices all over the United States. We mostly deal with health-related issues for both the public sector and also with pharmaceutical companies. We also help develop health policy. So I'm with the IT arm. Contrary to popular belief, at this conference, I am not just the CSS person. I am a Cold Fusion developer and have been since version 2.0. I also have helped write one of the books on Fusebox and have been very involved with the Fusebox for a number of years. So I'm one of you guys. I'm not just this, foo-foo front-end web person. But just like me, though, as much as you guys think that, as much as we all want to say that we're programmers and we just deal with databases and architecture and frameworks and stuff, we all end up working on the front end. And that's why you guys are here, right? How many of you guys are really good with CSS, use it every day, and really know what you're doing? Okay, handful. How many people have used it, run into problems, know that you should, and really want to get better? How many of you people even know what CSS is? Okay, how many don't? Okay. The reason I got into this is when I came to Washington, D.C. about 4 years ago, I started working in federal government agencies like a lot of us do out here, either as contractors or federal employees. And I got real interested in Section 508, and then from Section 508 got really into the idea of true accessibility. Because, frankly, I've seen a lot of websites that can be said to be 508 compliant that a disabled person couldn't use to save their life. And what I learned as I started doing more research was that separating content from presentation using HTML for true structural markup, in other words, it means something. When we have a heading, using an H1 or an H2, using a paragraph to do an ordered list to do navigation, menu items. When I do that and I create a structure that means something, using cascading style sheets then for the presentation layer makes it, A, really nice to look at, but B, very accessible for people with disabilities. And as a matter of fact, I found out that when I started doing that, that probably 70 to 80% of Section 508 and accessibility issues were taken care of just by doing that. And so I started talking about that, and I started talking about Fusebox layouts as an adjunct to that. The next thing I knew, people were saying, can you teach us about cascading style sheets? So here I am. So besides being a software developer and doing Cold Fusion, I also train on cascading style sheets. And I do have a class coming up, which I'll talk about a little bit later. It's going to be in New York in October. So if anybody's interested, it's a 4-day hands-on. This is a subset of it, a little taste, as it were. So what I want to talk about today, I can't talk about all of cascading style sheets because that could take me 4 days, 5 days, a week, or more, right? What I want to talk about is one particular aspect, and this year I decided to focus on positioning. It does build on the talks that I gave last year about the box model. How many of you guys saw my talk last year on the box model? Okay, for those of you who saw it, help out everybody else, okay? Because I can't do it. But we'll work through it. But what I'm going to be talking today in this session is simply floating, okay? So what we're going to talk about is, I'm going to talk about what floating is. There are rules to floating, so we're going to go through that. And we're going to talk about some of the float behaviors and clearing a float. I do not do pretty CSS when I teach. I don't do, oh, see how pretty this is. If you want pretty, go to csszengarden.com, Dave Shea's site. Wonderful site, everything's gorgeous. But I'm a programmer. I need to know how it works. And so that's what I teach. I teach you guys why it works. I teach you the rules underneath, what's going on, rather than just say, oh, just say float left and everything works. Okay? So we're going to talk about that. So in floating, content flows around a floated element. You guys all know this. If you guys have ever used an image in HTML, an image tag, and said a line left or a line right, what are you doing? You're floating it. Okay? When you float an image in HTML, the text wraps around it and you get some pretty interesting things. Same thing here, except that with CSS, we can float any structural element. You can float a paragraph. You can float an unordered list. You can float a heading. Any element that works, that is in your HTML, can be floated. So that gives us a lot more power than just being able to float an image. When we float something, we remove the object that's being floated from the normal flow. Normal flow in an English left-to-right language would be top-to-bottom, left-to-right. If you're doing Hebrew or Arabic or Chinese, it would be top-to-bottom, right-to-left. So when I talk normal flow, it means that anything in your structural markup, all other things being equal, when you get rid of your style sheet, everything's going to flow that way. Okay? But when we float something, we remove it from the normal flow. Think about it actually floating a little bit closer to you in the screen. And so it's actually out of that flow. It does not impact any of the other items that are still in normal flow. But it still affects layouts. So to give you an example, and I think I'm going to do it this way this time. I got a paragraph floating to the right side. It's outside. I even got a little thing this time. So you see this paragraph is flowing to the right side. It's outside the normal document flow, but it still affects this paragraph. This paragraph is actually between those, and I'll show you the source in a second. So you notice that when I flow it to the right, the third paragraph comes up. It doesn't come up any higher than the second paragraph, but it flows from there and around it. So if we look at source code, and I do a lot of source code. Like I said, my examples are not pretty. They're meant to illustrate specific concepts. So if you notice here, I've got a paragraph. And I just set it aside, floating it to the right, and I'm giving it some width and margins and padding and borders so you can see it. It is in the middle. What happens if I moved it? God, that's cool. Okay. By the way, if you have questions, I take questions in between. The other thing is if you have a lot of questions afterwards, I tend to not take them at the podium out of consideration for the next speaker. I will be out in the hall as long as you guys have questions, I will be out in the hall talking to you. So I do ask that you not come up to me at the podium and meet me outside instead. Anyways, let's talk about float values, because float is a CSS property. It has three values. It has right. It says float this item to the right of the containing block. Left floats it to the left of the containing block. And none is the default. If you don't have a float, it will just be none. It says it keeps it in the normal layout. You use none to overwrite something. Say that you have a float in everything, and in one area you don't want it to float. So then you would say float none to stop the float. Okay. Everybody get that? So float right floats the item to the right, and floating the document layout will float to the left. Yes?
What about clear?
Clear is something different, and we'll talk about clear towards the end. We're just talking about the item being floated at the moment. The question is, what about clear? And we'll talk about clear at the end. So when we float, we have margins. By the way, everybody know what a containing block is? Anybody not know? Let me explain it. Okay, there's a couple hands. Okay, a containing block, if you think about our document structure, everybody know what the document object model is? You've got HTML, and in it is contained a body and everything else. So body is, HTML will be the containing block for body. Body is the containing block for all your structure. So if you have divs wrapped around the things within the div is the containing block. So if I floated a paragraph, it is either contained within the body or something else within the document structure. So that's the containing block. I also call it the parent, because if you think about it, anything is encompassed is a child to its encompassing item. When we talk about floating, when you have margins around certain elements in the box model on vertical, they will collapse into each other. I bet you a lot of you didn't know that. If you actually say that you have a top margin of 10 pixels and a bottom margin of 10 pixels, and you put those two together, two paragraphs together, your margin's only 10 pixels. It is not 20. It will collapse into the larger number of pixels from one or the other. In floating, that doesn't happen. So margins around floated objects do not collapse. Okay. If you have to declare a width for a non-replaced element, a non-replaced element is something that's actually in your source code. It is not an input text, an input field or form element. It is not an image. Those are called replaced elements because we get them from either the operating system or it's a pointer to a file on the system. But a non-replaced element is something like text that we're typing in. So if you're, or a div. So when you're creating a float, you must declare a width. CSS 2.1 states that if a width is not declared, the width that CSS will give a floated object should tend towards zero. Okay? Now that's CSS 2.1. That's not always honored. Some of them don't, some of them do. So because we don't know what those pesky user agents are going to do, you better declare a width. Some of them will actually say a width would then be 100%. Well, if it's 100% of its parent, it contains in it, guess what you're not going to get? It's going to technically be floating, but you're not going to get a visual representation of the float. So you always want to declare a width on your floats. And you can do them in pixels, which are absolute. You can do them in percentages, and a percentage would be a percentage of your containing block. Or you can do it in m's, which I like. One m is equal to 100% of the size of your base, of a character in your base font size, which means that when you do things and people make their paragraphs larger or smaller, it stays proportional. And that's what we do when we do floating layouts. So we do not want to do that. And hey, I've got a sample there. I like samples. Can't you tell? Okay, so this looks about the same. So let's see what the code says, because I don't even know anymore. Ah, okay, you notice that I have a width of 25 ends on my paragraph. What happens if I take that out? By the way, I'm using TopStyle Pro. TopStyle Pro is a wonderful CSS editor. I have not found a better one yet. There's one for Eclipse in my Eclipse IDE, but it's not as good. But you notice that when I took out, it's still floated, but I don't have a width. It's honoring the margin that I set. But in Firefox, it's tending towards 100%. So if I take out my margin and my padding, it's still doing a little bit, but it's not what I want. So when we go ahead and we choose a width, it stays at 25 EM. So 25 EM, it's floating there. If I make it bigger or smaller, it's 25 EM of the paragraph, of the font size. So it stays proportional. If I was to change that to, say, 250 pixels, it would help if I said 20 instead of O, right? Stays like that. When I make my paragraph bigger, it doesn't move as nicely. So I much prefer using the M's to make it move, but you should always declare a width on it. And I've got to be really careful to put this stuff back because I'm giving this talk on Saturday as well, and I'd hate to have messed up samples for my Saturday talk. Percent would work. The question is, would the same thing happen if you use percent? Yeah, it would be percentage of the containing block, and it would expand and contract in proportion. So yeah, because you're using relative positioning when you use M's or percentages. Actually, in some cases, pixels are considered a relative unit. Unfortunately, they are not relative in Internet Explorer. And I do not know whether IE7 is going to change that, so I don't know. It'd be nice if it did. So, the containing block, when I talk about it, a floated element's containing block is always the nearest block level ancestor. By that I mean if you float a paragraph and it is within a div, that div is the containing block. If I have a list item that is floated within a unordered list, that unordered list is the containing block. However, if I'm floating a span, that span is an inline element. Okay? If once I float it, will generate its own block box. It follows, there's two box models. There's the block box model, which basically says that it creates a new line before and after it, such as a paragraph or a heading, or an inline box model, which is something such as an emphasize or a span tag, which says that there is no line before or after, and it will just go in line and continue flowing. However, if you float that, it becomes a block box. So you can never float an inline element within itself, and besides which, really, that doesn't make sense, does it? So a floated element will always generate a block box. This is the part I really, really love. There are 9 rules of floating. You will be tested. Okay? These are actual rules. This is actually how your browsers and CSS is going to determine where an item is placed when it is floated, where it ends up. Okay? The main gist of the rules is just making sure that all the floats go as far to the left or to the right as possible, and they float as close to the top as possible. Of course, if there were no rules, then everything would just float up to the top of our screen, you know, up there, and they would all jumble together and we'd never see anything. So the rules really do make a lot of sense. So the first rule, and when I'm talking about left, you can always substitute right if we're floating right. It just got to the point where if I say left or right, it gets really confusing. So just know that I'm talking about floating left here. All the rules, same rules apply for floating right, but just substitute right. So, first one, outer left edge of an element floated left can only go as far left as the inner left edges of its containing block. So if I have a div that's 50% of my page, and it's on the right-hand side, and I'm floating something to the left, it can only go as far left as that div is. In other words, basically towards the middle of the page. So if we look at this, what I've done is I have a div of 50% with a height of 75%, and I have a paragraph. You notice I do not have a paragraph on my rule one just going in, but in the paragraph, I'm floating it right, and I'm giving it a width of 50%. I can also float it left. Let's float it left because we're talking about left. Okay? So when we do this, what we get is it's floated left because the div is 50% and the width is 50%. Actually, no, that's still floating right. Let's do it that way. Okay? But it's only going, I have some margin in there, so it's not going all the way. If I was to take that out, let's see, it's because I have padding here. Oops. Come on, delete. So it goes a little bit left. You notice it does not go any further than the div. It can't, because it has to stay within its parent. Is everybody okay with rule one? Ready for rule two? They get worse.
You still have some margin on your paragraph.
I have a little bit of padding. I have a little bit of margin in there. So if you notice, I have a little bit of margin going in and padding. So I didn't take it all out, but just enough. So let's go to rule two. Ew! If an element's floated left and another floated element is already there, then the last element floated, the one further down in the document structure, is going to be placed against the right outer edge of the already floating item. Okay? it basically stops floated elements from overriding each other. It says, look, once I have a float, nothing can go past it. If you have two floats, you still got to go. You can only go as far left as my first float ends. Okay? If the floated element's top is below the bottom of all earlier floated elements, it can float all the way to the inner left edge of the parent. So if it's down below, it's going to float left. So all floated content will always be visible unless you start doing weird things with negative margins. Okay, but just assuming that you're not doing weird things with negative margins, floated elements cannot override each other. They can't overlap. All the information will always be visible. So if we look at our next sample, you notice that I have a 70% width div with 100% height. By the way, if you want to know how to create 100% height on an item, just throw 100% in your body and your HTML tag like that, and then everything will compute correctly and you actually get 100% on something or 80% of something. Little tip. So here I've got three paragraphs. I'm giving them classes 1, 2, and 3, and they're each being floated left with 30%. They're each 30%, right? So I just have those rules, and when we do it, each one floats up to the containing element, and they float as far left as they can without hitting the next one. They will not go over. It doesn't matter what I do. So, second element is placed against the outer right edge of the previously floated element. It can't go any further. And it must be to the right. Okay? Because there was enough room here, they all floated to the top of the containing parent. What would happen if I made them 34%? Well, then we get into rule number 3. If two floating elements would overlap, then the last element in the source would be forced down until its top is below the bottom of the first floated elements, again, preventing floated items from overlapping each other. So when we do that one, basically exactly the same thing, except I'm using two and I'm setting a width of 55%. Now, keep in mind, that one was float right. So don't, I have a left and a right. If I do both left, it's just going to move over. Just look better on the right. So again, we can't overlap. Yes? What was the second? If the floated element's top is below the bottom, it can float all the way up to the inner left edge of the parent. That's exactly what I am showing here. If we look at this sample, this one is below because it is not going to overlap. It's not wider than its parent. It floats as far up as it possibly can to the containing parent. So when we get there, it just floats up. It's just trying to go as high as it possibly can. When we get into the fact that these two, 55 and 55%, is bigger than 100%, then the containing parent is too small to contain both of them, so something has to give in the second item, the lower item in the document structure. It will go as far to the right in this case because I am floating it right, but it has to go below the first floated element. So all of these are working in conjunction. Yes? The question is, in terms of the height, if you create a selector of HTML, body, because different browsers decide which one it works with, if you place 100% height 100% in that, then you actually will get 100% or work off of percentages in the rest of your document structure. And so if we look at this, let's go back to sample, the sample. If I check this out, okay, in this case I said 75% for that div. The div went away. And that's because when you're working with heights and percentages, it's always a percentage of the containing block of the parent. If there's no percentage declared anywhere, then it's 100% of what? So setting HTML, comma, body to 100% will give you a lot of leeway in terms of your design. Not really part of positioning, but you know, we'll throw that in. Actually, I talked about that last year. Okay, we are not quite through half of these. So, 4 of 9. A floating element's top may not be higher than the inner top of its containing parent. We saw that. It can't go any higher than what it's in. So that's going to allow us to not have everything float all the way to the top of the document. Make sense? We don't really want it. If we have a paragraph within a div, we want it to stay within that div. We don't want it to go outside. And we're going to talk about that. I'm going to talk a little bit about that tomorrow because people do that with positioning. And then they don't understand what's happening. So we'll go through that tomorrow. Hint, hint, come to the class. Totally different talk tomorrow. Okay. So now the other part of this rule, though, is if a floating element is between two collapsing margins, and that the floating element is placed as if it had a block-level parent between two elements. A little bit different thing. This fine-tunes alignment. What happens if you have three paragraphs? And I showed you this in the very beginning one, the first sample that I showed you. There's a paragraph that's floated in between two other paragraphs. You don't want that paragraph, that middle paragraph, to float above the first paragraph. You want it to stay in between and float. So this rule actually specifically says that. What it says is, if there is a paragraph in between two items, such as a paragraph, two items that have collapsing margins, then we're going to act like we're going to create this phantom containing block around it so it doesn't move outside of the two paragraphs. So again, nothing up my sleeves. I'm floating the second paragraph. It's just between it. So I have a paragraph here and one below it, and I'm floating the one in between. If I didn't have that rule, it would float up to before rule 4, right? But because that rule does exist, God, where am I? Here it is. Here I am. So because I do that, it has to stay basically in the same place it would. It can't go above this one. It can't go above this one. Now, the reason that I have this above it is because it's at 50%. Let's set it at 75% so we can see a little bit better. I mean, 55%, excuse me. Okay? It still can't go above these. It has to stay within that document structure. Document structure is still important when it comes to floats. Okay, you can't take something totally out of the document flow and just move it wherever you want, regardless of the structure, when you're using floats. Float still depends upon the structure of the document to determine where it's going to be. Okay, we are more than halfway through this. Not bad, huh? Okay. Floating element's top may not be higher than the top of any earlier floating or block level element. Are they starting to start working together a little bit, make a little bit more sense? Okay. So what this does, again, it keeps floated elements from floating all the way to the top of their parent elements. It makes it impossible for an element that's floated, it makes it impossible for its top to be any higher than the top of a floated element that occurs earlier in the structural markup. So for everybody that's wanted to float something, they can't understand why it's not floating further up. You probably, there's something else above it in structural markup, and you're either going to have to do it a different way, or you're going to have to change your structural markup to support what you want to do. Chances are you're not going to want to change your structural markup. You are going to want to figure out how to position it in a different way rather than using a float at that point. So as we go to sample 7, I've got a width of 75%. I'm floating this right. And I'm actually floating 2 items. And I'm going to put a width in here because I should. Okay. This item right here is set below in the document structure. It can't be any higher than the top, than the one above it. It can float up as high. It cannot float up higher. So if I have 3 of these, or 4 of them, what's going to happen? Okay, this one goes down. You notice it's not any, it can't be any higher than this one. Did I save it? No, I did not. Notice this one still is not any higher than the second one. So it's saying, well, you're below me. You're up here. I can't go any higher. Even if I had room to go higher, I can't, because I have to stay, I cannot be any higher than the document, than the item that is floated just above me. Yes?
If for some reason we want the first element to appear lower, can we use margin on the top?
The question is, if we want the first element to appear larger, can we use margin on the top? Let's try it. That's what I love about this. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to create one called I'm going to create a class called p.1, a paragraph 1. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to set a margin top of 3em. So then this one we're going to set as a 1. What I've done here is I've actually created 2 classes, and I'm giving them the exact same information. So you can do that, because I'm saying for a paragraph that has a class of 2 and a paragraph of a class of 1, create all this the same. And then, oh, by the way, for the paragraph with the class of 1, just add something to it. So as we go back to our items, this one draw, it seems to drop because we've added a margin. It hasn't actually. We've just added a margin to it. The margin top is still at the top of that item. But yeah, you can do things with margins. I can do something even weirder with margins by doing a negative. And don't try this at home. Ah, shoot. 7. Okay, when I use a negative margin, I can overlap things. So be careful with that. Sometimes you want that. Other times you do not. Yes?
Supposing in that example you had, you where you had the lines up between the negative margin. Supposing you looked at that, what you really wanted to achieve was that the second two on the right were, you know, close up underneath each other regardless of what you had.
I think the question you're asking is if you wanted to achieve something where they actually seem lined up one above each other. You would probably want to use positioning for that rather than floating. You have a little bit more control over positioning than you do over floating. The positioning is harder in some ways to maintain. So come to the other class. They work together. Okay, let me get rid of this stuff real quick. Okay, so we're about halfway through float rules. I don't know about you guys, I find float rules to be pretty fascinating. But I'm weird. Okay. Floating element's top may not be higher than the top of any line box that contains a box generated by an element that comes earlier in the document structure. Huh? Okay. A line box is an invisible box that's created by all the characters of text in a line. Make sense? Yes. An inline element actually works more with the line box because the text is an inline element. The paragraph is the element around the text, and then the text is actually an inline element, or what we call anonymous text. So, yeah, the text within a paragraph, each line in there creates its own line box, because if you have items that are font sizes that are bigger within it, then you get the jaggies, the extra white space back and forth, because with a bigger font, it has to create a taller line box across the line in order to accommodate it. So, what this basically does is it further limits the element's tendency to float upward. It says it can't be on the top of a line containing content which becomes before the floated element. So, if I don't have a paragraph, if for some reason I'm not following proper structural markup, and none of us do that, right? Then, even if I don't have a paragraph in there, it's not going to allow it to go into the anonymous text. So what this means, get rid of that paragraph, okay? I have a floating element, and then I have an image and everything else. And we come over here, not sample 8, sorry. I have a lot of them, okay? You notice that the paragraph has an image in the middle of it? Because the image is actually floated in the paragraph it's contained in, it doesn't float into the higher paragraph. However, it also doesn't float above where it is in the document structure. So if you notice in here, this paragraph has an image in the middle of it. This paragraph has an image in the middle of it. There's enough room to add the note that. But you notice it cannot go above and go into that paragraph because structurally, it's below it. So that's what that rule means. Wherever you place something, it can't go above wherever it's placed within the document structure.
Can you blow the text size up on the paper?
Sure. I love Firefox. Is that a hand? I'm floating the image within the paragraph, the light bulb. So I actually have the light bulb. Notice here, in the source, the image tag, where is this? Is it working? And it stopped working. Isn't that nice? I bring it specially. Okay, let me use my mouse then. The image source is actually placed right after the it and the period. So no matter what I do, this light bulb cannot go above that word it. Does that make sense? So if I was to make it a little bit bigger, it still can't go above that. Any more questions? I know it's kind of weird and confusing. But the more we learn these rules, the little bit easier it is to figure out why the heck it's doing what it's doing and not just, oh, God, CSS. How many times have I heard CSS sucks? How many times have you guys said that? I know you have because I've heard you say it.
CSS sucks less.
Yes. Actually, CSS sucks a lot less when it's not IE.
Yes.
Okay. Floating element cannot stick out beyond the edge of its containing element unless it is actually physically wider than the containing element. So I can set something to 110% and it will stick out. but otherwise it will not. Okay? The question is, does this apply to images if the image is wider than the containing block? And the answer is absolutely. So basically, this prevents a situation where number of floated elements can appear in a horizontal line and go beyond the containing block edges. If you have a number of items that are there and the total width is going to be more than it, then the last one is going to get shoved down and to the left or down and to the right, depending on how you're floating it. Okay? A float that's otherwise stick out of its containing block when it's placed next to one is going to be floated down below any previous floats because, of course, it can't float above a float above it in structural markup. So as we look at this one, I use light bulbs just because, ding! Anyways, I have two images. I'm floating them. I have a width of 49%. I'm giving it a height. So I'm actually creating two images right next to each other in a paragraph. Nothing up my sleeve. They're at 49%. You notice they stay right there. What happens if I make them 55%? One gets floated down. What happens if I make it 110%? What's going to happen? They will stick out of their containing block because they are wider than by itself than the parent.
Why does that happen? Why does the container not stretch?
Because the question is, why does that happen? Why doesn't the containing block stretch? And that's because the spec in CSS does not require that the containing block stretch. So there actually is a whole specifications. If you want to go to the w3c.org and read it, there really is a whole set of specifications that tell you exactly what's going to happen. And by the way, though, even though reading specs is really boring, CSS is okay to read it. I would really encourage all of you to go back and read the HTML 4.01 spec if you have not, because it has changed. XHTML is an XML version of HTML 4.01, and there is a lot. When I went back and read it a couple years ago, there's a whole lot added for accessibility and structural. A lot has been deprecated. It really is a good place to go back and go back to the basics. So I would recommend that, if not the CSS one. So, and the biggest problem is not all the browsers actually followed all the rules for the spec, and like Microsoft. See me Friday, and we'll be wearing a fun t-shirt that a friend gave me. I'm not giving a talk, so I figure it's okay. I'll be glad to explain it. Okay, eight. We're almost there. Real easy. Floating element has to be placed as high as possible. Of course, this happens only after applying rules 1 through 7. But after that, it has to be even. It has to be even with the top of the line box in which it's placed. And we saw that with that image. It has to be at least as high as that. It can't be any higher. Okay, assuming that there's enough room. So that one's easy. Just has to be placed. And the very last rule. A left floating element must be put as far to the left as possible, and a right floating element must be put as far to the right as possible. A higher position is preferred to one that is further right or left. This rule, of course, is subject to all the rules preceding it. So basically, it just says, given everything, it's got to be as far left as possible. It's got to be as high as possible based upon the following rule, based upon all those rules. And by the way, all these sample apps are available to you. I gave them to TerraTech. So you can download these. The presentation has the sample numbers on each of the slides so that you can refer to it. But when we look at this, basically we're just saying it has to be put as far to the left and it has to be put as far to the right. Nice and simple. Whoops, wrong one. So this is floating. Has to be, because it's within the structure, it can't go any higher than where it's placed in the structural element. It can't go any further left than the float above it in structural element. So, okay. So do you think we have enough to go float now? Let's go float. Okay, let's talk a little bit about some float behaviors before we go floating. Okay. When we have a floated element that's taller than the parent element, the floated element will stick out of the bottom of the parent element. Okay? You note that when I talked about all those rules, they only discuss the top, left, and right edges. They never talk about the bottom. So, supposedly, nothing is declared about the bottom, and they should stick out. Some browsers don't do this correctly. Any? Which one? I don't know. The question is, which one? I don't know. That what they do, will they'll increase the size of the parent element's height so that the floated element is totally contained inside of it, even though this shows up as a law of extra blank space. Okay? And we saw that if a floated element is wider than the parent, it's going to exceed the inner left or right, depending on how it's floated. Let's look at some samples, and maybe I'll even bring up something. Okay? So I've got a div here. I'm just floating the image left. There's no clearing. And when we come in here, you notice that sticks out. How's that look in IE? Because, of course, we know we're talking about IE, right? And I don't even remember, to be honest. I haven't looked at this for a while. Yep. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but be aware of it. If you're looking for consistencies, be aware of this behavior. You might need to put a height on the div to accommodate it so it looks the same. Okay? IE is not doing it according to spec. I do not know how IE7 will be. And I'm more than happy to discuss stuff about IE7 after this, you know, in the hall. No, I have to put a height on this one, in a height on the div, so that both of them would look consistent. In other words, I can't control what IE does. It's always going to be contained within the div. I can go ahead and create the div of I hate having bandages on my typing finger. To simulate it so it is consistent. It's not correct behavior, but if I want to look consistent, I'm going to have to put a height on the div for Firefox to emulate the bad behavior in Internet Explorer. Yes?
Do you know on the head of the image, is there a way to make this effect happen? Like auto-height or anything like that?
No. I don't believe that there is. Because we're floating, remember, we're taking it out of the document layout. So that div, because a div, when you talk about the block box model, height is only going to contain whatever content, it's only going to be as high as whatever content there is in it. And a float is taken out of the document layout, the flow, so a div does not really see that it's in there. It will see the text, but it doesn't see what's floated. So height auto means very little in that respect. You can emulate the bad behavior, and in this case, if you want to make it consistent, you're going to have to emulate the bad behavior of IE in order to make it consistent across both of them. It's not what we want, but that's what we're stuck with. Okay. So here, again, I'm doing some stuff. And again, we're going to see some problems with IE on this one. Okay? Notice that the image is larger than the containing element. Bottom of the image goes down. And this one is overflowing. However, and this is a thing, we're floating it left, so it displays itself correctly a little bit. In Internet Explorer, it's going to move itself down. So again, when we view this page in IE, it's not the behavior we want. Now, Microsoft has promised to fix a host of the float bugs that are part of IE. There is a site called positioniseverything.net, And Microsoft has promised that the bugs that are noted in there, and I don't know whether these particular ones are because these are just behaviors, but there are a host of float bugs in IE that they have promised to fix in IE 7. So maybe this will be corrected. I can't tell you definitively. I don't know. I'm sorry? Well, if you use a lot of hash, you're going to have to go back and fix it anyways. So going through this, floated elements can expand, and this is kind of interesting. A floated element, and we use this to actually fix a bunch of the IE bugs. A floated element will expand to contain any floated descendants. If you have problems with something where you're trying to work with a float, try floating the parent. It might fix it. So if you need to contain a float, float the parent. So the way that we look at this is I'm floating my image and I'm floating the paragraph. Okay? And I have a div and I have a float. So let's get rid of the div first so we can see what happens. Okay? Oops. Notice that the div goes all the way to the top. If I want to contain it within there rather than giving it a height, I can just float it. So I could float in Firefox to get it to contain it instead of giving it a height. But I still can't get the same consistent behavior without that in IE and Firefox. And by the way, seriously, if you're going to work with CSS at any point, use a CSS2 compliant browser. You can use Safari on Mac, you can use Firefox, and Opera 9 is the first Windows-based browser that passed the ACID-2 test, and the ACID-2 test is a real complex CSS that doesn't work in almost anything, and Opera 9 does pass it. After you finish that, then go back into IE and fix the problems that you find. It's much easier than making it work perfectly in IE and then trying to get it to work right in all the other browsers. You know, it's really weird because over the years as I've been saying this, the first year I saw this, I saw on somebody's blog, I was a CSS Nazi chick. Because I'm telling people not to use IE, not to develop an IE, but to fix it afterwards. And over the years, I'm watching people go, yeah, that's right. So it's like, okay, more people are getting on this bandwagon. This is good. Let's talk about real quick, because I have 10 minutes, but I'm doing good on time. Backgrounds and floats. When you have a background, although the content, the text of an element is going to be pushed to the right or the left of the float, the element block itself is going to stay there. So a border is still going to be contained within the float. A background is going to go behind the float. So if we look at this, I'm floating something. I have a div with a border, black, and everything else, and I have an H1 with an aqua. So I have a float, then I'm floating my image, and then I have an H1. And when only the image is floated, see what happens. So let's go see what happens. Notice that because this is floating, it's floating into my heading. Notice that the text of the heading is pushed over, but the background goes behind it. That is specific. That happens. That is consistent with the spec. If you don't want the background to do it, then you're going to have to put a margin on your heading to push it out. Okay? And we've already seen what happens with negative margins, haven't we? When I did my negative margin, it pushed it up. Negative margins work the same way with floats as they do with non-floated elements. They can cause floated elements to move outside their parent element, should we choose. What happens to the document display when an element's floated out? It's up to the user agent to decide what to do. It can refloat the document around the float. It can overwrite information that's already there. Don't depend on a particular behavior for negative floats. So, in other words, don't use them. You'll see that in my code, whoops, I have a negative margin. Okay, I'm just floating this image negatively to the left and top. That's all I'm doing. So that's what it looks like in Firefox. That's what it looks like in IE. We get very inconsistent behavior. So don't do it. Unless you're only stuck on one browser and your users are never going to see it, don't depend on negative behavior. Now, if you are floating something down and you want to move it around within the parent element, that's fine. It's only when you try to go out of the parent element that you have issues. Okay? Floats content and overlap. CSS 2.1 states that an inline box that overlaps a float has its borders, background, and content rendered on top of the float. A block box that overlaps a float has its borders and background rendered behind the float, but the contents rendered on top of the float. Okay? So when we're floating something and it overlaps an inline element, we're going to see what happens. The behavior I'm going to show you is going to be independent of document source order. It doesn't matter if the element comes before or after the float, the behavior is going to be the same. So, what I've got is I have an inline div. I'm actually creating a div, and I'm floating it. Okay, actually, I'm just giving you an idea of inline so I can deal with it. I have an image there. The image is floated, and I'm giving it a negative right margin. Okay, then I have a bordered class in there. Okay, and actually, it should be block. I think. Nope, it's just bordered. Nothing in there. And then I'm doing basically the exact same thing here with a block. Okay? So as we look at this, okay? There's an inline element that has a strong tag set, and I created a background and an image, a background and a border on the inline. You'll notice that it floats over, and in this case, that the background and the border go over the floated element because they're in. It's an inline design. Now, there's not too often that you're going to do this, but you can. On this one, the borders and the background are based on the block model, and they go behind it. Now, the text is going to go on ahead, on in front of it, but not the background and not the border. Clearing a float. I was asked about that a little bit. Clearing a float means that we stop the floated elements from overlapping or affecting. Usually after you finish doing something, you want to clear your float so nothing else does the float. What it does is you can clear just left floats, you can clear just right floats, or you can clear both, depending on what you want to do. So, as an author or as a designer, we don't want our content to flow past a floated element. So to do that, you always want to set the element after the float. You want to clear it to prohibit that behavior. If the element might have been placed next to the floating elements, say that you have an element and you're floating it left, and that element might have been placed to the right of it because it's flowing around it, and you don't want that, you want to clear that so it will be pushed below it. Okay? And that's all it is. It's you're just clearing something and saying, I don't want to float anything else. I don't want this text to float around my floated element. I want to clear it from now on. And what it does is it creates enough white space after the float to just simply push it down so that it then goes back into normal document flow. Yes? Float none is if you want to go ahead and create the... No, float both. It's float none says stop the items from floating. Clearing stops the item, does not stop the item from flowing from floating, but it stops the information after it from flowing around the float. So here I'm doing some clearing. I have a left clear, a right clear, both clear. And I have some divs and I'm floating my images and I'm floating around it. So as we go and look at this. And I have 4 minutes. But as I said, I will take questions outside as well. Left float, no clearing. The paragraph is just going to go right next to it on the right. A left float with a left clear, the image is going to be cleared to the left. So any left float, the image is going to clear. I have a right clearing with a left float. It's not going to do anything. If I was clearing to the left, if this was a right clear, and I'm clearing it to the right, then it will clear. So I have control over what am I clearing. Am I clearing just for left floats, or am I clearing just for right floats? Or am I clearing for both? No, it goes after the float. The question is, does it go? Yeah, the question is, does the clearing go into the floated element? No, it goes into the elements that you want to stop from going up into the floated element. In CSS 1 and 2, clear a float by increasing the top margin of elements so it ends up below the floated element. CSS 2.1 clears a float by adding extra space clearance above the element's top margin. It's a subtle difference. It's usually not going to mean much to anybody. It's just how the browsers do it, and I like to give you guys way too much information. So, just in case, little announcement. This is just a taste of what I do. I do teach a 4-day hands-on intensive CSS class. I am giving one in October in New York. It is going to be in Midtown, Park Avenue South, just near, I think, Penn Station. It's $13.99 a person. I only take 12 people maximum. If you want, you can sign up there. If you want more information on the class, you can give me a business card or you can email me. And as I said, we have about 2 minutes for questions, and then I will also stay outside there as long as you want. Please fill out your surveys. Those are really important to us. I read each and every one of the surveys to find out what you guys think, what I can do better. So please fill them out, and I will stay and answer questions as long as anybody wants. Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.